On perhaps a somber note, I would like you all to join with me, first of all, in expressing our shock and horror at what has occurred in Paris in the last 24 hours. There can be no justification for the despicable attacks which have claimed the lives of something like 120 people that we know about at this stage. Terrorism will never defeat democracy, and we must stand together with the victims, their families, and the people of France. So please join me in a moment's silence. Thank you, Alban. Thank you all. Conference, it's good to be here. When you elected me party leader in 2011, I said I would do three things. I would recruit new candidates, I would reorganise the party, and I would make the party battle ready for the elections, not just this year or next, but for the next 20 years. I set about developing a strategy to professionalise and update the party. I never promised you overnight success, but I believe we're moving in the right direction. There's a long, hard graft ahead, but we have never shirked from the challenge. 45 years after this great party was born, we recognise that we do need to update, to refresh, and to reach out to a whole new generation of people. It was way back 30 years ago on a visit to Washington when Tip O'Neill, the former Speaker, said to myself and other SDLP colleagues who were visiting at the time that there were a number of very simple ingredients to a successful campaign. He advised us that we needed the issues that mattered to people. We needed the candidates, candidates that people would vote for, and we needed to put a good organisation behind them. Well, conference, I think over the last couple of years we have recruited some great candidates. And we have the issues and the policies nailed down. We were never short of good ideas. And we have the party structures, increasingly better organised, that we're already ready to do electoral battle in the years ahead. And I intend to make good on my promise of party renewal, but that work is not yet complete. I know what's needed to win elections. It's called hard work, it's called vision, it's called dedication. And I know that together, you and I, we can make this party successful again. We often talk about vision. At conference, it's no good having a vision unless you have a plan to put it into action to make it happen. I believe I have both. My vision has been guided by the founding principles of this party. It is a vision of a new and better Ireland for the next generation, brought about by honest dialogue, active persuasion, and genuine agreement. It is an Ireland brought about by uniting people around a common cause, like the United Irishmen 225 years ago, whose objective was a simple one. It was to unite Catholic, Protestant and dissenter under the common banner of Irish men and Irish women. That vision won't be realised by wishful thinking. It will require considerable time and effort to make it happen. But as we do so, first of all, we must bring about genuine reconciliation within the North and then between the North and the South. We must undo the hurt and the pain arising from 30 awful years of violent and savage conflict. Secondly, we must secure meaningful social justice and ensure that no child can be left behind and that no adult is denied the dignity of a decent life. And the third point, we must ensure that Northern Ireland works for all its people and that all the resources we can muster whether natural or man-made, are marshalled to create prosperity and economic opportunity for all in 2016 and in the years beyond. When I took over in 2011, the political obituaries were already written. The need for organisation and renewal was screamingly obvious, and I threw myself into that, and I think I can claim some success in that regard. The other job that was needed to be done was to unite the party and to get us all pulling on the same rope and hopefully in the same direction. That was why I offered a system of collective leadership so that as many as possible of the senior members of the party and the office holders would be involved in all the major decisions. It has proved challenging at times, but I remain determined to deliver with openness, partnership, and meaningful change, because change is coming. Generational change has been underway for some time, as a look at our new council team will prove. Generational change is making its way through this party, and eventually it'll get to me. I don't expect to stay forever, or even for a moment longer than I need to get the job done. But we do need proper succession planning at all levels in this party, because it is absolutely integral to the project of continuous party renewal, which we have already begun. That project is already reaping rewards for us. We're beginning to see more than just the green shoots of recovery in areas where people have embraced the need for renewal and recovery. We have helped to breathe new life into branches that were moribund, and we've discovered some exceptional new faces and new people that will be future key players in the party. I'm proud to say, in fact very proud to say, that in the upcoming Assembly elections, we will have about 60% of our candidates fighting an Assembly election for the first time. And I want to look here. These are some of those candidates. These are some of the people that will put the SDLP back in control at Stormont, back in control of the politics that we know this country needs. To me, that's meaningful change. That's the change we need. Following our local elections in 2014, 40% of our councillors were new. That's some change. And 40% of our councillors were women, up from 22% in the previous cycle. At the recent Westminster elections, we retained our three seats, a tremendous result, given that it was an election of cynical unionist electoral pacts and some particularly dirty political tricks in my own constituency. Conference, our new candidates have been mentored and encouraged by a number of talented MLAs who will be stepping aside at next year's election. These individuals have paved the way for a new generation of talent to emerge. Let me pay tribute to some of them. Joe Byrne. A man whose fierce loyalty as a party servant never ceases to inspire, never stops inspiring me. He has a sharp intellect and an exceptional eye for detail. Joe's work as party spokesperson in agriculture has been outstanding, and I know I will miss him. I will miss his wisdom a great deal, although I understand Joe's not going too far away. He's going to remain as party treasurer. Thank you, Joe. Dominic Bradley. Dominic has led the way in promoting the Irish language in the Assembly, despite strong resistance in some quarters. He has done a great deal to promote better understanding of autism through his role as chair of the All-Party Group on Autism, and he has distinguished himself as vice chair of the Finance Committee. Thank you, Dominic, for the work you've done. John Dallet. John has been the champion of whistleblowers and those seeking justice. Despite severe threats to his own safety, John has never been afraid of speaking up or speaking out. He has served East Derry with distinction for 18 years, and he has served as Deputy Speaker in the Assembly for the last 5 years. John, we thank you from the bottom of our hearts. Those are just three of the people that have made this party what it is. We wish them well as we look forward to the next chapter for the SDLP. From party values point of view, our guiding pillars are reconciliation, prosperity, and social justice. Conference, the question for me and for you is, how do we use these key principles, these key pillars, to help us break the current stagnation and political deadlock? From where I'm sitting or standing, we may well be on our way to another half-baked agreement, but how long will it be before we're back for more discussions? Let's call it Stormont House 3. The public are sick, sore and tired of the political inertia, and to be honest, so am I. We need long-term solutions. We need sustainable solutions. And in some ways, we need to get outside the political class to find them. The current round of talks has gone on for 9 weeks. But in reality, the crisis has been with us for almost 3 years since we sent for Richard Haass to help us sort it out. The big issue is dealing with the past, obtaining satisfactory arrangements that will provide truth and justice for victims and survivors. Victims like the Ballymurphy people that are outside there. Britain is resisting, tooth and nail, our every demand for open and fair disclosure of the sort of information that victims and survivors require. But I want to tell you, we will not settle for anything less than truth and justice for victims and survivors. We could create functional structures that might deliver truth and justice, but the refusal of the British to allow access to fundamental information under a blanket of national security will frustrate any structure that ever was devised, and we are not prepared to go along with that. On the issue of welfare, we have demanded adequate mitigation around the severe welfare cuts. Our original amendments were sabotaged when the DUP deployed a petition of concern. We will demand adequate protection for the weak, the vulnerable and the marginalised in our society, and massive cutbacks in working tax credits and child tax credits have made a difficult situation almost impossible. Paramilitarism has been the scourge of this society and holds back political, social and economic progress. We have to rid Northern Ireland, for once and for all, of paramilitary groups, paramilitary activity, and paramilitary influence. There must be zero tolerance of paramilitary activity and the associated mafia-like community stranglehold that goes with it going forward. We cannot afford to have these issues hanging around us any longer. Both governments and all political parties must work together to eradicate all aspects of paramilitary pressure on our communities. Many of you will share my frustration that we seem to lurch from one crisis to another at Stormont. We risk facing a future of recurring deadlock and crisis management if we don't start addressing the fundamental issues holding our society and our people back. I believe there's a real need for some meaningful way of again reconnecting the political process with our social partners. There's got to be a permanent and protected space where business and the unions, the trade unions, farmers and retailers, community and voluntary bodies, the churches and other key stakeholders can have some direct input and impact on the political process. I believe that it's time for us to move beyond the Stormont political bubble. I know we have a delicate political system there, which is facing the challenges that the Good Friday Agreement could never have foreseen. But we must find creative ways of solving the new problems that have arisen in the recent years, and the problems that we face not just now, but in the years ahead. Following the Good Friday Agreement, we had hoped that having partnership and power sharing at the centre would create a political space for reconciliation to happen and for trust to be built. But that changed with the St Andrews Agreement a decade ago. That modification of the Good Friday Agreement encouraged some of the parties to maximise their vote by standing as single community champions, as tribal chieftains, cannibalising support from smaller groups within their own community. Rather than tackle the underlying conflict, they have frozen it. And from their perspective, forward movement is destabilising. So they seek processes which are static rather than dynamic. And for them, it is literally safer to divide up poverty than to seek prosperity. It is safer to pluck at a couple of old issues out of the frozen conflict and to have another sham fight about flags or parades than to tackle the real challenges that real people face in the real world. For them, it's safer to treat a real issue, such as the welfare cuts, in the old sham fight way than to do what people are crying out for, and that's to cut an honest deal as real politicians in the real world would do. But, Conference, I have to tell you that although people rail every day on the radio against the Stormont stalemate, there is little or no evidence that the responsible parties will suffer much electoral damage. For instance, the policy of 10-minute DUP ministers should have hurt the DUP electorally, but it probably won't. Well, probably won't. Once we're caught up in the election stampede. And while the DUP might have blamed Sinn Féin, and indeed other parties for their in-out regime, we know the real reason was because they were blindsided by Mike Nesbitt. They devised a silly scheme to prevent the departments working properly. The public were furious, and so was I. Finance Minister Arlene Foster was content to monitor what she called rogue and renegade elements, the Nationalist and Republican executive colleagues, during the crisis. Do you remember that? Health Minister Simon Hamill, no, put his feet up. And he put his feet up at a time when the outpatient waiting list was sitting at 153,000. Outpatient, 153,000 people are waiting to get seen at the hospitals. That's not the worst of it. That's going to be 200,000 by April next year at the rate it's growing at. So whether Simon decided to stay in post or not, this rise in the waiting list numbers is coming at us. It's a damning indictment of successive DUP health ministers who each in turn have failed to get to grips with the health service or help alleviate the excruciating pressures faced by the public and by healthcare workers. So rather than Arlene acting as a watchdog on finance, perhaps Simon could have been watching the waiting lists, and maybe Simon could have done something about them. But then, conference, I'm going to tell you something you know already. The DUP always put their party political interests first rather than the people's interests first. I want to ask you, do you think that can go on indefinitely? Well, I think there has to be a better way of doing business and attending to public affairs. But let me predict what will be the central thrust of the campaign in the next Assembly election. On the DUP side, their slogan will be, "Vote for else us or else Martin McGuinness will become the First Minister." Could you see that coming? And Sinn Féin will respond by saying, "No, vote for us because Martin will be the First Minister." Who needs policies or political programmes when we can reduce democratic debate to such banal simplicity? Well, actually, I want policies and I want programmes that make a difference. And actually, I think you want them, and I think our people out there want them. Conference, I want to share with you something and assure you that our party will assess in depth the quality and the character of the next programme of government that will come after the election, the Assembly election. And if it doesn't come up to the mark or deliver for the public, then we will not shy away. We will not be afraid to take some very tough decisions around that. In the meantime, we have just got to find ways of shifting the political centre of gravity out of the frozen conflict zone created by Sinn Féin and the DUP, and into the social and economic sphere. If we embrace the model of social partnership, that will mean that social justice and economic development will come to top of the agenda. Conference, talking about economic development, the hard-won peace process helped transform this region, but it was never meant to be the final chapter. It was the foundation stone for a better future. If we are to see this society and its people truly emerge from conflict, we need another kind of transformation. We need a prosperity process that produces training and skill development and economic opportunity for our young people. Northern Ireland has a population of 1.8 million, and a bit less than half of them, a good bit less than half of them, are economically active, something like 700,000. We lag dangerously behind our neighbours in the south and indeed across Europe. We need to have at least 1 million people working if we're to have any hope of building prosperity in our society. At present, we generate revenues of around 14 billion a year, but we consume 24 and we end up with 10 billion of a block grant. My big worry is that London will not pay forever. In fact, we know that this Tory government are not going to roll back on their austerity and they're going to cut our support here to the bone. So our situation, my worry is that our situation is fundamentally and economically unsustainable, and that's why we really need our own prosperity strategy. And that's why in the talks that are going on that were supposed to be sorted out last week, that's why we put jobs development, infrastructure development, skills development at the top of the agenda, along with the other issues that I mentioned earlier. Issues like welfare, dealing with the past, and paramilitary activity. I believe that the fiscal deficit is an unspoken but absolute barrier to our aspiration of Irish unity. Unless we make Northern Ireland work economically, our dream of Irish unity will remain pie in the sky. We can make Northern Ireland work by building our community to generate enough revenue to pay for the public service we want without being dependent. We need a new consensus between the two governments and the five parties and the public for a programme of economic growth. We want to offer the government a new deal and let them advance to us some of the subventions, perhaps 5 years' worth, and let us invest that in building a future. And after 12 or 15 years, I believe we'd be well able to pay our own way and stand on our own feet. Over the last 60 years, There have been 15 major economic reports highlighting the general economic downward trends. We don't need any more reports to tell us the obvious, to tell us what we already know. The primary investment of the prosperity process should be a massive programme of workforce training and skill enhancement at all levels, and at its core should be very strong collaboration between business and third level education, linked in to quality research and development investment in line with the best practice in the Irish Republic and in Europe. We need to think unconventionally to make the case for infrastructure investment from the Treasury, which we can and will in due course repay. We need better roads, we need better rail, and we need better broadband connections. And we need to be first movers in the development of wind, wave and tidal energy, and to use such projects deliberately and strategically for continuous enhancement of workforce skills. If we want our people to prosper, we can't leave the economy just to the economists, because running societies and changing things for the better is not their business. Change requires proactive political intervention. Change is the business of principled politics. And we want that long-term deal with the Treasury that helps create prosperity. If we can create the space for 1 million of our people to be in work, then we're one step closer to bringing the people, all the people of this island together. And if we make Northern Ireland work, the case for a united Ireland becomes a lot more compelling. Conference Creating Prosperity will see us realise that ideal. If we're to achieve that prosperity, though, we need to reconcile all the people living on this island. At the time of the Good Friday Agreement negotiations, the SDLP fully recognised the challenges inherent in reintegrating paramilitary prisoners back into society. And we also recognised the necessity to do so. But it hasn't been without its challenges. And it's time for all parties to speak out on the fact that some paramilitaries took the benefits of the peace process but are still wreaking havoc in communities across the north. We need an end to all paramilitary activity and the mafia-like community control that flows from it. It is not enough for them to have a non-aggression pact with the British, but to continue to oppress ordinary people in deprived communities. The recent independent panel report has provided Sinn Féin with a unique opportunity to break the political deadlock by just telling the truth. A bit earlier, Paul Quinn was mentioned. We want the truth about Paul Quinn, and we want the truth about Robert McCartney. And until that's out there, victims and survivors will never be satisfied. This whole thing is a challenge to the whole nationalist community, north and south. Awful crimes were, and unfortunately occasionally still, are being carried out in the name of the people of Ireland. That's your name and my name. We can't turn a blind eye to that. And we won't turn a blind eye to that. The current proposals on the negotiating table have fallen far short of the Eames-Bradley proposals, which were torn up by unionist politicians. But dealing with the past has been extremely difficult, but we will continue to demand truth and justice for victims and survivors. The legacy bill proposed by the Secretary of State provides cold comfort for them. The proposed historical investigations unit must have the power to investigate, the full power to investigate all outstanding cases and those that were inadequately dealt with or unfinished by the historic inquiries team. But the British government want to sweep as much as possible of the past dirty war under a carpet of national security. We are not and will not agree to that. No crimes can be concealed by a blanket of national security. If we're to build that better future that we all want for our children, then we must deal with the past in a truthful and ethical way. Truth and reconciliation are inextricably bound together. If we want to become a truly reconciled people, then we must be comfortable with difference in our workplace, in our neighbourhood, in our public spaces. That is the only way we will be able to heal the hurt of the past and start looking towards a prosperous new Ireland. The recent BBC and RTE opinion poll and cross-border debate was informative. There was broad agreement that people both north and south want to see Northern Ireland work. They want to see a power-sharing and partnership arrangement delivering real reconciliation, and they have reasonable concerns about whether the economy, or basket case in some economy, as some people refer to it as, in the north, could bear the weight of unity. We can't unite Ireland until we unite this place and start making it work properly. The SDLP are, in my belief, are the only party that have the credibility and the division to deliver on a new and agreed Ireland. Conference, in the coming year, I intend to widen and deepen our outreach to a number of key allies in Dublin, in London, Brussels and the United States, and I will continue to advocate, as I have always done, for SDLP interests. Over the past 4 years, we have managed to re-establish many crucial links with friends in those places that we had previously lost touch with, and this reconnection has been vital to sustaining the party renewal process. People there are excited to see what exactly our renewal process will look like. All will be revealed in a few weeks' time. But if we all commit to the renewal and rebuilding process, I expect some very positive days ahead for this party. The other thing I want to mention briefly is that one of the key priorities for us in the next year is opposing, with all every sinew we have, the possibility of a British exit from Europe. The SDLP have played a pivotal role and will continue to play a pivotal role in leading that debate. Sinn Féin and the Unionists are not committed in any meaningful way to Europe. We are the only party prepared to show leadership on this vital issue and to advocate strongly for the European Union. As a passionately proud Irishman and a European, I am deeply worried about the ramifications for this island if Britain exits the European Union. Such an exit, yes, would have a devastating impact, not just in the City of London and other major British cities, but it would have adverse consequences for the trade, the massive trade that takes place daily between Ireland and Britain. But for us in the north, it would have a punishing impact in particular. And some people reckon it might cost us as much as £2,000 a head in terms of lost income and lost revenues. If Britain were to exit from Europe, where would the funds be found to replace the single farm payments for Northern Ireland? Just to take one simple example. A report prepared for the Northern Ireland Assembly by the Open University says that between 2007 and 2013, a total of 2.42 billion sterling, not euros, sterling, in EU funds came into Northern Ireland. And half of that, 1.2 billion sterling, was in single farm payments. Does anybody think that Britain will be able or willing to replace that money, especially if Britain still has to contribute to the EU budget, even as a non-member, in order to get access to the single market? Our agricultural industry would be devastated if Britain was to leave the European Union. And let me say clearly the SDLP view. The SDLP view is that Europe has been good for us. Good for us in a dozen different ways. It has evolved and developed over the past 70 years for the better. Its goal from the outset was and remains to cultivate links and mutual dependence between European states so they could never again go to war, as they did with such disastrous consequences twice in the last century. But we're going to need to reach out beyond the political groups and parties. We're going to have to reach out to mobilise civic society out there in favour of Europe. They will be crucial to winning this referendum. And it's a process that has to occur not just in Britain, but the Irish, the people living in the Irish Republic, have a major role to play. They have to reach out to the Irish diaspora, their sons and daughters and aunts and uncles living in Britain, and persuade them to be a moderating voice in a campaign which could be overwhelmed by the European Eurosceptics in Britain. We in the SDLP cannot allow Britain to sleepwalk out of Europe. Irish people, north and south, have a huge role to play. It's a fight the SDLP are determined to lead on and determined to win. So in summary, my friends, 45 years after this party helped inspire a generation seeking equality, social justice and a better future, the SDLP must rise up again and renew itself all over again. During the past 20 years, we have put all our efforts into ensuring that the problem political parties were integrated into the structures here, the structures of devolution, and that there was some basic decency. This has cost our party dearly. I'm not saying that we would ever do things differently again. If we had to do them all over again, I'd be quite prepared to make the sacrifices that were necessary to get us from the hell that we were in with violence and all the rest. But our principal stance in serving the public good and politics well is over. We will refuse to be a mudguard for the problem parties any longer. We're not going to be there. We are wide awake to the harsh realities of doing business with those who are resisting power sharing and cross-border development at every turn. And we're wide awake to the difficulties of doing politics and doing business with those who can't tell the truth about the past. We will stand together. We won't be afraid to make tough decisions in the interests of the betterment of our society. And over the next 20 years, as we roll forward, in order to meet the challenges of those 20 years, our party executive has adopted that powerful programme that I referred to earlier of renewal and rebuilding, which will be crucial in helping us develop key policies, recruit the best people, and appeal to voters, whatever their age or their background. That's the agenda we're setting for the next 20 years. We will be creating jobs and growing the economy. That's going to be front and centre of all that we do. So to those that say we can't, or to those that say we've had our time, I say this party will be great again. I believe passionately in this party and its future, its bright future, because when the SDLP is strong, our politics are so much the better for it. When the SDLP is strong, the structures of government work much better and much more constructively. When the SDLP is strong, the marginalized and the weak in our society are protected. And when the SDLP is strong, our people have hope, hope for a brighter future. There is a better way. That's the SDLP way, and that's where we're going.